I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Previously On Watchmen in association with Sky Atlantic, taking you through some of the best and most complex television in the world.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy, what an episode that was. Welcome to Previously On. How are you doing? I'm Jamie East with episode 4 of Previously On Watchmen. It's a podcast designed just to help you through some of the world's greatest television. It's as simple as that, really. And I think we can safely class Watchmen as great television now, can't we? First of all, just wanted to mention something quite exciting. If you're listening to this in your ears and if you're out and about and stuff, bit of a heads up, if you've got Sky Q at home, you can now get Previously On directly from Sky Q. If you go onto your home screen, you will see Watchmen in there. If you click Watchmen, you can either watch Watchmen or you can listen to Previously On the podcast. It's all there right on your telly box, so you can watch it at home before the next episode launches. That'd be quite helpful, wouldn't it? Now, coming up on this episode, dead excited. A bit later on, we're going to be speaking to Al Murray, legend, comedy legend Al Murray, and also friend of, friend of great television. He was a regular guest on Thronecast over the years, and so it's been fab getting him back on to muse about Watchmen as well. So he's coming on and having a good old chat about that. We'll look ahead to episode 5 a bit later on too. But first, I'll tell you what, let's just get straight into it. Here's a recap of Watchmen Season 1, Episode 4. If you don't like my story, write your own. We begin at a house in the wide open Oklahoma countryside, where a woman sits patiently outside trying to sell fresh eggs and watches in disappointment as another passing car drives by without getting any. We follow a brief montage where we see the lady and her husband enjoying what seemed to be a simple life-affirming existence involving jigsaws and a slightly weird shared toothbrushing routine before bed. However, as they prepare to settle in for sleep, the doorbell rings, and with this being Watchmen, we are washed in quiet uncertainty and creeping dread for them. The doors open to a woman asking if they are the Clarks. The man recognises her as Lady True and welcomes her into the home. Once seated, Lady True asks what the couple have heard about her. Mrs. Clark states they know she's a billionaire who's building a big clock tower down the road and that she isn't seen out and about very much. Lady True responds saying that she's actually a trillionaire and that she's building something much more impressive than a big clock, and she does nip out, but only when it's deemed important enough. She produces an hourglass from a bag and informs the confused couple that for the next 3 minutes, they are the most important people in the world. Lady True then states that she wants the house that they live in and all the land attached. The Clarks tell her it's not for sale. The doorbell rings ominously in the background, and Lady True calls out in her native Vietnamese. She returns her attention to the couple and tells them as they have no children, they've got no legacy, as legacy is blood, not land. Mr. Clark makes to object, but Lady True displays her natural authority and hushes him. As she pulls some paperwork from a file, she explains she became rich via advanced pharmaceuticals and medical technology and knows that the couple used one of her facilities 10 years ago in a bid to become pregnant, but that they failed. So, she then offers the Clarks their legacy in the form of a child in return for the property. Naturally, Mrs. Clark is furious and demands that she leaves. However, Lady True says she's not offering to make them a baby because she already flipping went and did it. She then takes a baby from one of her aides and hands the couple their biological son, also stating she's popped $5 million into an account before giving them 30 seconds to make a decision. As the pair crumble and coo over their unexpected new family member, Lady True announces they have 10 seconds left or she'll have to destroy the baby. Crikey. Signatures are quickly scribbled onto a contract, and that, folks, is how you get business done. The house begins to shake, and outside we see what looks like a meteor flash overhead before crashing to the earth. Lady True mysteriously announces that that is hers. We head off to Angela Abar's bakery. Inside, she's hard at work cleaning all remnants of her surprised grandfather from the premises. She goes to burn the "watch over this boy" note, but holds back. A message comes through from the DNA centre stating a new branch of her family tree has been found, and as she listens, the note accidentally catches fire and turns to ash in her hand. Now decked out as Sister Knight, she makes her way to the DNA centre and breaks in. Inside, she confirms that Will is her grandfather, and then gets to see images and information on her great-grandparents, Obi and Ruth, who we witness getting their son Will to safety back in Episode 1. She then hears that the entire family, including Will, was killed in the Tulsa Massacre of 1921. Angela, however, knows better. There's a crash in the background. Angela investigates and runs into Laurie, who's outside laughing hysterically in front of a car that's just dropped from the sky. You remember, it was the car that just dropped at the end of the previous episode. Angela was in the building behind her all the time. Inside the vehicle, Angela finds Will's medicine, but there's no sign of the mysterious man himself. The next morning, Angela hammers on the door of a rusted bunker, a door which is opened by Looking Glass, aka Wade Tillman. Deep in the bunker, Wade's developing photos of the squid that have rained down, and Angela declares him a bit weird. No shit. She presents him with the tablets pulled from her car and asks if he can use his X to determine what they are. She also shows Wade the clan robes found in the closet of Jug Crawford and asks him to keep hold of them so that Laurie doesn't get her hands on them. We cut to Angela donning her Sister Knight outfit and heading out. On a bridge, as she dumps what remains of the wheelchair, she spots another costumed character. This one's in an all-in-one silver jumpsuit, watching her. They run off, and Angela gives chase, and just as she seems about to catch her prey, the silver one squirts what appears to be lube over him and slides flat into a storm drain and vanishes beneath the pavement. Lube man is born, and Angela is far from impressed. That was proper cool. Back at the office, Angela asks around about him. She's got his belt, to which are attached two bottles of the oil he squirted over himself. Angela hears there is a new boss and walks into Crawford's office to find Laurie sat behind his desk. Laurie tells her she's pulled some prints from the car and that they belong to a William Reeves, a former cop who retired young and fell off the grid. She points out what Angela already knows, that Will must be over 100 years old now and probably gets around in a wheelchair. If you remember, Laurie spotted the wheelchair tracks at the scene of Crawford's murder. Agent Petey interrupts with a message. There's another lead on Angela's sky-falling car. Laurie and Angela hit the road. Laurie reveals she went over to Angela's and spoke to her husband, Calvin, further unveiling a few nuggets of information she now knows about her passenger, such as that she was born in Vietnam, and that's also where she met hubby. In exchange, Laurie tells Petey, now relegated to the back seat, to reveal her own traumatic tale. Petey tells Angela that Laurie's parents were the comedian and Silk Spectre, and that her father had sexually assaulted her mother, resulting in Laurie. Odd bonding session over, they arrive at the staggering and definitely more than a clock tower home of Lady True. Inside what appears to be like a huge air hangar, Laurie questions a worker about the possibility that the aircraft in there could have picked up a car and then deposited it a short time later. They're stopped by a woman introducing herself as Bian, the daughter of Lady True. Bian informs the group they're invited to take tea with her mother, but then tells Petey it's a ladies only invitation, leaving him fumbling and a bit awkward. En route, Bian tells Laurie and Angela that they're building the first wonder of the new world. Inside what looks like a huge glass biome, they're met by Lady True. Questions are asked about Angela's car dropping from the sky, and Lady True agrees to supply a list of all the staff capable of flying the aircraft there and offers condolences for the death of Judd Crawford. Then, in a delicious twist, she states there is an old Vietnamese expression she remembers from her youth about grief, and in Vietnamese tells Angela her grandfather wants to know if she got the pills. Also in fluent Vietnamese, Angela responds that he can ask her himself, using slightly less polite words. Laurie sees the statue of Adrian Ozymandias Veidt, and we hear how Lady True bought Veidt's company right after he disappeared. Laurie asks why she made Veidt look so old in the statue, and we pan to the cast face of Adrian Veidt looking exactly as we saw him last episode. Kind of interesting. Cut to Adrian Veidt and some more top-level strangeness and absurdity. This time he's on a rowing boat alongside a small wooden pier, pulling in what look like crab or lobster baskets. He pulls what appears to be a newborn baby from the basket, examining the child as it coughs and then shockingly throwing it back to the watery depths. Back in his house cum lab, he places two other babies in a large machine and powers it up. The babies spin like rotisserie chickens and we hear their cries in the background as Adrian pops on some reggae and tucks into another slice of birthday cake. Each of these Vite episodes are taking place on his anniversary, aren't they? The cries in the background shift as though the babies are aging, and indeed as he walks back over to the machine, we're greeted by two fully formed adults, one male, one female. Adrian opens the door and announces happy birthday. Outside, he introduces himself as their master and asks if they know what they are. He reveals that although their master, he's not their maker. Who is? Inside the grand dining hall of his home, he apologises for the mess as the camera pans and we see bodies of former clones strewn everywhere, bloodied and battered. He announces he had a bit of a rough night. In further wonderful weirdness, the bodies are loaded into a catapult and sent soaring through the air as Adrian watches via telescope. He reveals he was sent to this location 4 years ago, thinking it was a paradise, but realising it's actually a prison he now fully intends to escape. 4 years ago? Episode 4? Back in the marginally more normal world, Angela returns home to Calvin. She pulls him up over lorry calling and asking him questions. Calvin replies that he was left confused about the revelation that Angela's grandfather had appeared and potentially murdered Crawford. She mentions that Laurie knew about the meeting in Vietnam and asks if he told her about his accident. Calvin says no. Back in the home of Lady True, Bianne wakes with a start and heads off to see her mother. She reveals she's just had a nightmare, saying she was in a village that was burned by men who made her walk so long her feet hurt. As she heads off to return to bed, she says goodnight to Will Reeves. Lady True and Will are talking over tea. He's been there all along. She tells him she's concerned about the pills and that she's worried he's getting distracted because family is now involved. To this, Will stands up. He can stand up. Declares himself just fine and only flipping walks. He asks her how much longer. Lady True says 3 days, to which Will replies that in 3 days, Angela will know what he's done, will hate him for it, but he is still in all the way. The pair look up to the sky as Will repeats the words, tick-tock, tick-tock. Blimey. Did you find that useful? I certainly hope you did. There's a lot to get your teeth into this week. A lot of themes are going on. Also, a few tidbits that we learned about Adrian, which was quite exciting. So without further ado, shall I just discuss that with our guest? I think I should. Ladies and gentlemen, please be upstanding for the man, the myth, the legend. It's Mr. Al Murray. Al, how you doing, mate?
I'm very well, Jamie. How are you?
Very good. I've not seen you since it's the finale of Thrones, wasn't it?
Oh, God, what a totes emotion night that was.
It certainly was. Yeah, yeah.
Red wine and then the strange wave of disappointment that people had to deal with. I loved the ending.
You drank wine and you knew things. It was a good night. Yeah, I did as well. I mean, but yeah, as I said at the time, it's one of those, and I suspect we'll be having similar conversations with Watchmen where it's kind of like, there's no right or wrong. You know, actually, they write the show, so it's right.
Yes.
You know, they made it up. You literally, you can't tell the person that decided how it ends, how it should end. You know, that's not how it works.
Well, precisely, which I think is the sort of, one of the odder things that fandom offers. And in fact, Watchmen offers you that right from the get-go, doesn't it? Because Alan Moore supposedly disowns anything, any adaptation of his work.
Yeah.
He says he's not seen the film. He says he's not seen V for Vendetta.
I don't believe that for a second.
Well, I don't believe because it's interesting because the film kind of complicates watching this a little because this is quite clearly the comic book. This is squids from other dimensions or are they, you know, and all that.
Yeah.
Whereas I actually think the thing they did in the film where it's a series of nuclear blasts, you know, is roots it in the real world slightly more, you know, and actually for me is what I found entirely satisfying I really like the movie. I'm a big fan of what Zack Snyder did with it. If anyone was going to do it justice in cinema, it was him.
There was some poor acting aside, but I thought the look and feel of it was good. Oh, yeah. And like you say, I think the decision to completely change the ending was a valid one, especially at the time that it came out.
Yeah, so, exactly. So,
this though.
It's a whole new level,
isn't it?
Well, yeah, because the thing is I think I've got three copies of the graphic novel and a deluxe version in my loo.
Yeah.
Right. And I remember buying the reissue as a volume because I'd missed the single issues. Right. So.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I am, it was Dark Knight and Watchmen. Dark Knight Returns and Watchmen were the two comic books at the end of the 80s where you were like, you know, this whole thing has been rebooted. And you just knew there was going to be this bow wave through cinema, that they were going to be able to do it, and the superhero thing had been reset from basically Biff Bang Pow,
yes.
Batman, yeah, and, yeah. And you know, I mean, if you look at the Spider-Man movies from the 70s, they're very sweet, but honestly, you know, like...
Nicholas Hammond starring.
Yeah, Nicholas Hammond, yeah, who turns up in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
That's right, he did, didn't he? Yeah, it was really good to see him, actually.
Yeah. But anyway, this, I mean, I have to, you know, I'm that into Watchmen. I've got to watch this. There's going to be no way that I'm going to avoid it. I'm not such a loyal Alan Moore fan that my eyes cannot be...
Sullied by another interpretation.
By this, but I mean, so I watched the first one and I was kind of like, I just wasn't sure about the first one because there was lots to take in, the fact, you know, that it's 30 years later and that they were seeding little tiny bits and pieces. Dr. Manhattan on the Moon was the only glimpse you got.
Yeah.
But now here we are, episode four, that's Laurie. It's Silk Spectre 2.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. Yeah. And the way they've seeded it in, And this unfolding thing with Ozymandias, and he, you know, where is he?
When is he? Yeah.
Where is he? When is he? What's he trying to? He's trying to figure something out, and what's going on? And also, he remains as homicidally
maniacal,
crazy as ever. And in this, it has come up with some moral detachment that allows him to slaughter clones. You know, they don't count and all that sort of thing.
It's
just fantastic. I mean, I'm totally sold on this.
Well, I'm sold because for the first time in quite a long time, I'm watching a series where I genuinely have no idea where it's going. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
I'm enjoying the wash of surprise every single episode. So you know, and that takes some going nowadays. And I think a lot of that is down to Damon Lindelof. And I think.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're a fan or a foe of Lost, you can't deny the majesty of The Leftovers. And if one thing is certainly coming to the fray, I think with episode four, is that he's now really getting his teeth into this. And so should we have a bit of a chat about episode four then, about what?
Yes,
what,
why not? Yeah.
What kind of went on? I've already done a recap earlier on in the podcast.
Yeah.
So let's. What was your favourite bit out of it? I mean,
Louvre Man.
Where, I mean, what a joyous kind of like bizarre kind of scene. I'm hoping that we never see him again, and that was it.
Well, we may never. I think that's what we're dealing with here, is a programme where we may never see him again, because it's a strange world.
Yeah,
and it's a world full of loose ends and things that haven't been tied up, and you know, which is a mark of what Alan Moore did with the comic anyway, and. But yeah, that happened, and he's gone, he's disappeared. She couldn't possibly chase him. What the hell is it? It may mean nothing, and we're in a world where people dress up.
Yeah, well, the riser. I think if it does anything, it hints at something that there's the great Peterpedia thing on the HBO site that they've been kind of adding extra info on, and I think Petey, the agent, was kind of printed wrote an article about the rise of vigilantism, the rise of Max.
Right.
So I suspect it was just to show that there people are just starting to get ideas above their station now.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Things are sort of out of hand. They've got out of hand, haven't they? Yeah. I mean, which is wonderful, because after all, the comic ends with the squid and world peace and all that, and everything's
Ozymandias
has made his big... Yeah. Made his big gesture, but it seems it hasn't solved a thing.
No, and I think, I mean, one, I guess if we're trying to find a theme throughout this episode, I've been kind of reading up on it this morning. I guess legacy was quite a lot to do with it. There's on both sides. We saw the the landowners at the beginning get tempted with their legacy, another farmed baby. It's a bit of a trend, isn't it? And $5 million just to basically get off her land.
Yeah.
And am I right in thinking that was a flashback, right? That was her showing how she acquired all the land. Am I right in thinking that?
I just don't know. I mean, what it
shows
is
there was a scene after that where you saw all of the mall and the shops and stuff appear.
Maybe it was. And the she knew the meteorite was going to land there, obviously, So you've got a character who can see the bigger picture, you know, like Dr. Manhattan. I mean, what I'm enjoying is the parallels. Is that Laurie's telling jokes like you have comedian telling jokes and Rorschach telling jokes.
Yeah.
So she's inherited their legacy, but of the way they communicate with each other. You know, the stranded thing of her on the phone to Dr. Manhattan telling those jokes. That's what I'm also really enjoying about all of this is that you are in the Watchmen universe. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you're in that mode of storytelling, but transposed to television. And I think, that it's Laurie that we do have one of the Minutemen.
One of the originals. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
One of the originals actually fully functional in the story rather than like hinted at. You know, and she's. And what she become, you know, taking heroes down, you know, because the guy in the bank is ostensibly Night Owl.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a Batman.
True. Yeah, yeah.
You know, billionaires dressing up in costumes trying to save the world. You know, so what's happened with her and Night Owl in the meantime?
According to the kind of all the documentation and stuff, what's happened is that they both got arrested.
Right.
For breaking, is it the Keene Act? It is the Keene Act,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
they got arrested for breaking that. He's still in prison somewhere, but she took a deal. That's apparently some of the backstory that's gone on there.
Right, right. Because after all, they had the airship, his airship, didn't they? In the first episode,
and obviously Angela's kind of amazing night vision goggles are kind of reference to it as well. So there's all the Laurie stuff, which is amazing, and then the other bit of legacy is Angela's legacy and her relationship with the mysterious kind of Will Reeves, who we saw doesn't really need that wheelchair after all, even though he does appear to be 100. I hope I look that bloody good at 100. Do you know what I mean? So
yes, but who is he? Who is he?
And why does she hate him so much?
Yeah.
You know, there were those two moments there where Lady True was kind of spoke to her in Vietnamese to kind of say, did you get the pills or whatever it was that she hinted at, and then again in where she was searching for the family tree in that weird kind of exhibition center.
Yeah,
she doesn't seem to have much. There's no love lost there, considering the fact she's just discovered a kind of whole new kind of
long lost family member. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
yes, I mean, she's not interested, is she?
No.
But I think that's because maybe. You know, the investigating the past throws up unpleasant things. So, because she now knows that you know that her boss was a clan wizard.
Yeah,
and that's it's almost
the uncomfortable truth. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Going forward is going forward is more fruitful for her than going back.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Because after all, she. You know, when she investigated her memory of being shot, there are two people there, aren't there? There's the guy she kills, and then she's shot by someone else.
That's right. Yes.
She's told in hospital, "You killed the guy who shot you. You got him. He shot you, and you got him."
Ah, crikey, I missed that.
But her memories of someone pointing a gun at her.
Wow. Okay. Yes.
Who then doesn't kill her? So she was spared. So there's. So what's actually gone on there, you know, and was she spared to drive her into the police program because the, you know, the White Knights figure that actually the way the police is set up will get them their race war quicker.
It'll incite it all. And
Exactly. Then it feels like that machination's going on. But then Lady True seems to be sitting outside that or aware of that and playing a bigger game, Ozymandias style, you know,
because well, she's.
She seems to be the Ozymandias character taking that role.
Yeah. Which leads me to believe. I mean, so let's talk about Adrian Ozymandias, yeah. Which is my favourite bits out of the. I sit there waiting for Jeremy.
Oh God,
to come
on. when he reenacted the Manhattan's origin in episode two,
oh, it's like, just beautiful.
This program is not fucking about.
Yeah, no, it is, and it's great, and it carried on that. He's getting all the best scenes. I mean, so a couple of things to take away from his kind of his section in episode four was, number one, he's clearly, we now know he's definitely in some form of prison. We saw that from the trebuchets and all of that. Number two, it's almost certain now that every single episode that we see him is a year after each other.
Right.
So each kind of act of his is taking place on an anniversary. He's always got a slice of cake in there.
Well, it's the anniversary of the day.
Of the day, yeah, exactly. Which I think some people cleverer than me have worked out that means that possibly episode seven of this season is the season that Adrian will have his moment.
Right.
But one more intriguing for me, I was watching this thinking, all these clones that he's been kind of interacting with, I presume that they were him, that they were all his doing. But I got the sense from this one that they're all there already. He's just kind of farming them. He's kind of fishing them in that pond what was like a weirdly disturbing / hilarious scene where he was kind of selecting these kind of like babies.
Yeah, lobbing them back in.
Was just brilliant. What do you think is going on there?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if he's Lady True's prisoner or something.
I think everybody thought that he was Dr. Manhattan's prisoner on the moon or on Mars or somewhere like that, which I was all for. Now I'm thinking, especially the fact that we saw the statue of him in Lady True's kind of like conservatory. I think you might be right there.
Well, and who's the mysterious park ranger that won't let him kill the buffalo?
Yeah, exactly.
And she's been introduced in Tulsa and then in this episode properly, and maybe you know that we're getting that she's also in that world as well.
Yeah.
And much as she admires him, she needs to contain him or something, or is saving him up for something.
Well, or that she needed rid of him so that she could buy his company, because that's she took over his legacy. She's now running Ozymandias' legacy.
Yeah.
What do you, have you got any clue as to what, I mean, she's obviously got a plan. Her Lady True and Will Reeves have obviously got this, like you say, this big plan. It's got to be her versus Dr. Manhattan, hasn't it? I mean, it just has to be. She's built doomsday clock.
Well, I think it kind of has to be, doesn't it? Because the problem with Dr. Manhattan, I suppose, is that he has absented himself from humanity. The world,
yeah,
and he has no right to. Is what you know. If you're all that powerful, you could argue he's got no right to step away from the world and its problems. So maybe what she's planning on doing is bringing him to heel. You know, like but this is it. I have no idea.
No, I mean, that's the thing with Lindelof, isn't it? It could go anywhere. It felt quite... Did you watch Lost?
Oh, God, yeah.
So this one, to me, felt a little bit Dharma Initiative. We kind of like got a glimpse of a whole other section going off on a tangent.
Yeah. Because what do people think she's doing? You know, rather than what do we know and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, we've not seen, it's not like, she's not like a Bond villain where her alter ego is that she's like running a newspaper organisation or something like that. What is she doing? She's built what she's calling a sculpture. There's no way that fucking doomsday clock is a sculpture. That's bad news. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say
it's surely pointing at Mars.
Yeah, it's not looking good for anyone. And then building all of these kind of telephones to God. She built those as well, the ones that Laurie's using to speak to Dr. Manhattan. One thing I'm quite interested about, what do you think those pills are? What do we think those pills are? Will Reeves said that.
Well, they're surely why Will Reeves is still alive, aren't they? I mean,
immortality. It says they're a passive aggressive explainer. That's what he said they were, which kind of means everything and absolutely nothing, doesn't it?
Yeah. But that's Lindelof, isn't it? Is that he bungs in things that that really are like red herrings or not, and you just there's just no way of knowing. I mean, that's in a way. I mean, interestingly, when it started, I thought, oh, this is quite like Westworld. It's kind of got that kind of otherworldly thing going on.
Bit of tech involved.
And also, you know, confidently saying, this is the universe that you're in now, and there are things we'll explain, things we won't, things that exist in the background and all that sort of thing. Taking you as a viewer, like, assuming you're gonna do some thinking and you're gonna keep up and all that, and it's but the thing I think where it's different is far more unsettling than Westworld, and I think far more unpredictable. You know, because in Westworld, you know, the robots are going to realize they're robots. Then they're going to realize they've been exploited.
Yeah,
the grand
themes are kind of well mapped out in Westworld, I think.
And kind of have basically a sense of inevitability of where this can only really go in one direction, which after all is, you know, the core of Michael Crichton's original story is, you know, like to raise those philosophical questions, you know, and maybe secondary ones about what is consciousness. I mean, what I love about this is, you know, is what Watchmen's always been about is about power, responsibility, consequences of your actions. Yeah. You know, the idea of literally ideas of chaos theory that tiny things can cause great big, can cause great big knock-ons, you know, because Dr. Manhattan, after all, he forgets his watch, and that's the thing that makes him, you know, a tiny thing makes him the most powerful being, you know, literally the butterfly wings. And this is full of that. So those pills may be the most important thing in the story, or they might just be that he's got a migraine, you know.
He might just be winding up the red pillars. Isn't it the red pillars on Reddit? Those kind of weird kind of like blokes that they cry because they can't get
laid. Exactly. But how did he get out of his handcuffs?
Oh, mate.
This is the thing. Yeah. Is this the thing with you know, and it also reminded me a lot, you know, that when he says, oh, I can lift a man over 200 pounds. You think we're in a wheelchair. It's impossible. You know, maybe when he takes his pills, he's
something else.
Yeah, he's something else altogether, or he's turns into his younger self. I mean, maybe he's going to crop up in a minute, you know, because we've got the superhero TV show as well that they gave us in episode 3.
That's right.
Maybe he's in that. Maybe he's a Minuteman we don't know about. Maybe he's some figure from then.
Oh, mate, it's going to be great. Listen, thanks for that, mate. What are you up to? You're on tour at the moment, right?
Yes, I'm on tour. Ipswich, Hull, Brighton, going all over the place until the start of December, and then I've got my podcast as well. If people are interested in the Second World War,
What's it called? Where can we find it?
It's called We Have Ways of Making You Talk, and it's me and James Holland, and we shoot the shit about the war. And what happens is I start holding forth about something, and then I remember that he's written a book about it.
Oh, dear. Yeah, story of my life, though. It's just preaching to the experts.
Yeah, exactly.
Listen, Al, thank you so much for coming
Real
on,
pleasure, mate.
Really good to chat to you. Speak to you again soon.
You're listening to Previously On Watchmen in association with Sky Atlantic. You can watch Watchmen exclusively on Sky Atlantic every single Monday at 9 p.m. But don't panic if you've missed it, because each episode goes straight up on demand as soon as it's aired. For more information, hop over to sky.com.
Thanks, Al. Much appreciated as ever. You are welcome anytime. Do go and check out that podcast. And also, if you fancy grabbing some tickets to go and see him on tour, then you can do so. You've only got until the beginning of December to do it, though. So hurry up. Okay, it's that time again. Each week we have a bit of a dive in and see what is in store for episode 5. Here's the trailer. Let's have a listen.
Hey, mirror guy.
I know you know it's looking glass.
We can't see who they are, but we can see where they are. You find this church, maybe we find the cavalry.
Hands, we know there are other dimensions than this one. But this is the dimension where we live, and we will not live in fear.
Ready, Mr. Phillips?
We are all in a tunnel, and every tunnel ends. It ends with light.
Well, all right then, what have we learned from that trailer? Well, I'll tell you, because you can't see it, so I'll see it for you. It appears we're going back to a character-driven episode. And I think we're going to be finding out a bit more about the mysterious looking glass, Tim Blake Nelson's excellent looking glass. Looks like, and this room actually reminded me a bit more of The Leftovers, Lindelof's fantastic Leftovers, where we appear to be seeing some support groups for people that are suffering from some kind of anxiety about the kind of extra dimensions, one of which is looking glass. So hopefully we'll find maybe where his paranoia stems from. You know, he lives in an underground bunker, doesn't hardly ever takes his mask off, you know, average kind of guy, really. And then I guess the other side that we see is back to the elements of white supremacy. We catch up with the Tulsa Police Department and find out how they're going in their plot to defeat the 7th Cavalry. Laurie Blake is settled into her role as the new chief of police, perhaps a little too comfortably. There's a bit of a tense exchange between Laurie and Looking Glass. And by Jove, are we seeing an actual escape attempt from Adrian Veidt / Ozymandias? We see him seemingly put himself into a catapult. He's got a thicker skin, which is what he was afterwards, and a bit of a thicker helmet as well. Could this be his escape from wherever or whenever he is? Doesn't seem to give us any more answers to the questions that we had raised in episode 4. Guarantee it will leave a lot more question marks at the end of it. It is called Little Fear of Lightning, and it's coming up next week exclusively on Sky Atlantic. Thanks very much for listening. Hope it's been helpful. Don't forget, Watchmen is available exclusively on Sky Atlantic each Monday at 9 p.m. If you've missed any of the episodes so far, do not panic. Don't panic. They've got it covered. Each episode of Watchmen goes straight up on demand as soon as it finishes airing on the Monday night. So they're all there, all ready for you to get stuck into. For more information about Watchmen or indeed any of the other awesome shows that Sky Atlantic have got going on right now, just head over to sky.com. If you've enjoyed Previously On, do us a favour, give us a cheeky little 5-star review, tell all your friends, particularly if there's someone maybe in your household that needs to get up to speed with Watchmen so that you can enjoy it together. Maybe this podcast would be quite useful for them. If you're new to Previously On, you might want to go back and check out some of our previous episodes. We've covered recaps of a hell of a lot of series already. There's every single episode of Game of Thrones. We've done Peaky Blinders, Stranger Things, we've done Big Little Lies, and there's loads more of them to come. If you've got any suggestions, just get in touch. We're over on Twitter at Previous Podcast. We will see you next time. Until then, you've been listening to Previously On in association with Sky Atlantic.